Hello, everybody. How y'all doing? Welcome back. I'm Hank Wilson. You know, I've been spending a lot of time recently here on talking about the Civil War, up to the Civil War, what happened after the Civil War, so on and so forth. So I thought today I'd kind of go back to the beginning. I want to take us back to when Texas wasn't Texas, Mexico wasn't Mexico, and Europeans were kind of just trying to be European, and they were beginning to explore and jump out and see what the real world was like. They knew what was like around the Mediterranean, North Africa, things like that. But they really had no idea of what was going on over here. And so they do decide to go exploring, and they bumped into a continent, and they're surprised to find out that people are already there. Now, when the Europeans first encountered Texas, the world was indeed a very different place. Maybe not too different from today, because countries were fighting over land, gold, religion, natural resources, and political power, very much like we do today. I mean, very much. They still hated each other and killed each other for the silliest reasons. However, it was still different. There were no cars, planes, trains, buses, electricity, fast food joints, and certainly no TV, radio, and internet. Now, without the modern technology, the things we take for granted today, it took a whole lot more courage to go exploring than it does today. Although I'm going to say that astronauts, those people, they've got the courage that it really takes. But for the most part, yeah, it doesn't take a lot of courage to go to a park or to go see something else. These were people who were going out to things that they had no idea what was there. Now, in the late 1400s, around 1488, Portugal became the first country whose sailors were brave enough to sail out into the Atlantic Ocean. Well, not true, not really. They weren't. Vikings were. Vikings sailed the northern Atlantic around 1100 AD. But for the sake of this story and where we're going, we're going to give the Portuguese their credit. The Portuguese exploration was primarily, though, along the coast of Africa. And that was because, well, Portuguese explorer Bartolomeu Dias was the first to sail around the Cape of Good Hope, which is the southern tip of Africa, and he made it to Asia. Okay, now, he was the first European to get credit for it. Because remember, most history that you learned in school was originally written by Europeans and then turned into something that Americans could relate to. So everything we were taught, everything you have been taught in America about history has been very Americanized. It's just the way that society was and is. They're still fighting about it now in states around the country. Because, you know, it turns out that Chinese Admiral Zheng He sailed all around Africa and Asia around 1404. So, Diaz's trip was important, though, because otherwise, to travel to Asia for trading purposes, to pick up all the goods that society wants regularly, required a lengthy overland trip. Now, his success led mariners from other nations to wonder if there might be a shorter way to Asia that did not encroach on Portuguese routes. Now, even though people wondered about a shorter route, there were few nations with the capability to sail ships out into the Atlantic to find an answer. That changed when Isabella of Castile and her husband Ferdinand II of Aragon succeeded in driving out the Muslims who had ruled southern Spain for over 300 years, and they united the country under a Catholic flag. Now, the conquest was complete by 1492, and it was at that time that Christopher Columbus convinced the monarchs that by finding a western route to India, Spain would have increased military, economic, and, just as important, religious power. Now, as many remember from American history classes in grade school, children are taught that Christopher Columbus discovered America. In truth, while he was one of the first Europeans, and right now I won't go back and talk about the Vikings who landed on the coast of Canada 300 years earlier to reach what in his time was the New World, the islands he encountered are the Bahamas, Cuba, and Hispaniola. I love that word, Hispaniola, in 1492, and in 1493, he landed in our current Puerto Rico, all islands inhabited as they had been for thousands of years. Columbus, claimed all the land he encountered for Spain. That's what they did. It's called colonization. And 3 years later, in 1496, the Spanish put their first settlement in Santo Domingo, in what is now the Dominican Republic. From those early arrival points and settlements, the Spanish began to explore the region, usually going up and down the coast and mapping the shorelines, still looking for a shortcut to India. Now, by 1501, Spanish sailors had explored all the way up to what is now Newfoundland and Labrador in present-day Canada. To reach North America from the islands, it was inevitable that the ships would bump into Florida, and they did. However, they thought that Florida was just another island. Now, in 1519, the governor of Jamaica, Francisco de Garay, sent out an expedition to explore what was considered an unknown country between the Rio Panucho of Mexico, which empties near current-day Tampico, Mexico, and the island of Florida. Now, Lieutenant Alonso Alvarez de Pineda set out with four ships and 270 men to explore, and he sailed into the current Gulf of Mexico. Upon reaching the west coast of Florida and sailing north, his journey began to cast doubt on the idea that Florida was an island. His ships, after they bumped into more land, turned to the port or left, and for several weeks sailed along the coast towards the sunset. Alvarez saw the mighty Mississippi on June 2nd, and then reached the low coast and barrier islands of Texas in late June and July of 1519. This is a land he called Amichel, A-M-I-C-H-E-L. Now, the name is known from only two sources: the royal patent granted Francisco de Garay, Alvarez's sponsor, to settle the region, and a map known as the Cortez map, published in 1524. Now, based on this journey and encounters with native peoples living along the coast, the Spanish explorers knew there was more territory inland, and they knew there were native peoples living along the coast, but that's really all they knew until around 1534. Now, in the early 1530s, a party of four led by Alvar Núñez Cabeza de Vaca made the first recorded exploration of today's Texas. It wasn't nearly as simple as it may sound. Remember, in those days, you couldn't jump on a plane, you didn't have drones, there was no accurate maps showing how to get from point A to point B. Cabeza de Vaca was actually a part of a larger expedition in 1528, captained by Panfilo de Navarre, that was designed to settle an area between Florida and present-day Tampico, Mexico. But man, it went bad quick. Captain Narvaez landed near what is now Tampa Bay. Now, that wouldn't have been so bad, except he had sailed from Spain and needed to land on the eastern side of Florida. Instead, he ended up on the western coast. Now, at that time, he made a terrible decision to land about 300 men and have them explore the land to the north, which wouldn't have been all that bad, except the area he was supposed to be looking for was 1,500 miles to the south. Now, after about 4 months of trouble and deaths among the men, they decided to build some rafts and leave. Since each raft held up to 50 men and supplies, they were weighted down and needed to stay close to shore, and they wanted to reach San Sebastian del Puerto near present-day Tampico at the mouth of the Rio Panucho, again, a 1,500-mile journey to the south. The wind caught the rafts and blew them north, and they spent months bumping into land and generally having a rough time of it. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details of what happened to them. It's a great story, though. And if you want to know more, I'd suggest the book Spanish Texas, 1519 to 1821 by Donald Chipman, or go to Texas History Online and search for Cabeza de Vaca. Now, by 1532, de Vaca was down to one companion, and eventually in their travels, they did come in contact with three or four other survivors of the earlier expedition. They ended up being captured by unfriendly local peoples, turned into slaves. Yes, they had slavery. The tribes and the nations and the people that lived here all had slaves. It was a common part of life in those days. And finally, in 1534, broke away and made their way into northern Mexico near where the Rio Grande empties into the Gulf. They crossed back over the Rio Grande and traveled further inland, and eventually they reached what is now the town of La Junta, stayed there for several months, and finally reentered Mexico by crossing back over the Rio Grande at a point about 75 miles east of El Paso. Now, during their inland travels, they had to traverse very rough territory, and that is when they encountered the Chumano, depending upon how you want to pronounce it. Now, it's important to understand that the Indians, the peoples that lived here, are identified by variants of what other first people called them, whether friend or foe, and not what they called themselves. In the case of the Chumano, it is generally thought that the name Chumanos was used to identify at least three distinct peoples of the Southwest and South Plains. These people include Pueblo Indians in Salinas, an unknown nomadic trading group that lived around the Rio Grande and Rio Conchos, and the Caddoan-speaking Wichitas along the Arkansas River and Red River basins. Now, although they ranged over much of northern Mexico, New Mexico, and Texas, their most enduring territorial base was in central Texas, between the lower Pecos River and the Colorado. The earliest recorded use of the name of Chumano is in 1581, and that was Antonio de Espejo's reference to villagers at La Junta. But some historians disagree with this, and part of the issue with the historical records is the people seem to have disappeared from the records after 1700. Now, what records we have are from the early Spanish explorers who described them as naked because breast and genitalia were uncovered. Both men and women did wear moccasins, that makes sense in this land, and tunics, and both men and women wore cloaks to protect against inclement weather. They were also traders, and it appears that they lived in almost permanent houses. Because there have been ruins found near La Junta that consisted of stone circles that seemed to reflect that type of housing. Chumanos supplied corn, dried squashes, beans, and other produce in exchange for pelts and meat. The area with the most archaeological evidence of the Chumano seemed to show a group that traveled between the Pueblo country of New Mexico, northern Mexico, and the Trans-Pecos area of Texas. In 1540, the Coronado expedition found Querechos, Apaches, and Tejas, Chumanos, at war in the plains east of the northern Pueblo villages in what is now Texas. Some scholars dispute whether the Tejas were Chumanos or Caddos. However, it is known that one of the combatants were the Apache. The Apaches controlled most of the territory north of the Rio Grande and east of New Mexico. Now, the Apaches came into the Southwest sometime between 1000 and 1400 AD, initially roaming along the east side of the Rocky Mountains. They moved into Arizona and New Mexico, and eventually pressure from the Comanche and some other tribes forced them to move further south and west. Once in Texas, two groups, the Lipans and the Mescalero, lived almost completely within the boundaries of Texas. The Lipan Apaches calls themselves Tindi, but their most commonly recognized tribal name likely derived from the Zuni word Apachu, meaning enemy. Both the Lipan and the Mescalero Apaches lived together as extended families, and the head of the group was the most prominent member. One interesting thing about the Apache is sometimes they would make war with another Apache band, but also make peace with a previous enemy. They were a nomadic people, and the band leaders were always male, but upon marriage, the man would move in with his wife's family. Now, when and if the wife passed away, the husband stayed with the wife's family, who would often supply him with a new wife. They lived off buffalo and wore clothing made of buffalo skins and stayed in tents which were constructed of tanned and greased hides. It is thought they were the second group of Indians to learn how to use the horse after the Pueblos, who learned from the Spanish. As the Apaches moved further into South Texas, they ran head-on to the Spanish, who were moving northward. After the Spanish founded San Antonio in 1718, the Apaches found a convenient location at which to stage raids against their European enemies. They're very, very intelligent peoples, and they took advantage of every opportunity. Now, the Spanish at San Antonio attempted to make peace with the Apaches, but had little success. And after a series of clashes, the viceroy ordered the governor of Texas, Fernando Perez de Almazan, to secure peace with the Apaches through gentle means. The Spanish and the Mexican governors all tried to make peace with the Apache throughout the 1700s and even into the 1800s, sometimes with some success, but nothing permanent. The Spanish attempted to establish missions to convert the Apache to Christianity with little success. When a mission was completed in 1757 on the San Saba River, the missionaries were excited when, right after completion, the first Indians began to arrive at the site. And within days, 3,000 Apaches were encamped around the mission. Their excitement quickly dimmed when they learned that the Apaches were not willing to enter the mission. Instead, they had gathered for their annual buffalo hunt and for a campaign against their enemies, the northern tribes. Now, this type of cultural misunderstandings would continue and still continue for years, and they do add another layer to Texas history and current Texas society. Now, okay, next time I'm going to explore the geography of the Trans-Pecos. I'm going to talk more about the tribes, the nations, the peoples, the bands that lived in the area, the arrival of the Spanish in El Paso, and the Tiguay Indians, who had to flee New Mexico and settle in Texas. This is the hidden history of Texas.